The Australian Economic Review, the September edition, has an intense focus on disability programs. I'm joined here by Associate Professor Roger Wilkins, who has one article in the Economic Review that focuses on the disability support pension and the factors behind the growth of that pension. But Roger, before we start, if you could explain what the disability support pension is, how many people are on it, and how much does it cost to the Australian Exchequer?
Well, the disability support pension is the primary income support payment provided by the federal government to people with disabilities. There are approximately 800,000 people currently receiving the disability support pension. Most of them are aged between 16 and 64. So in 2012-2013, DSP payments alone totaled $14.9 billion, and that obviously doesn't include program administration costs.
If you take a kind of a bird's eye or an eagle's view of this, and if you look, as you've done in this, on over a 30-year period, and you chart the growth of the DSP, can you describe that growth?
Yeah, so we looked at the last 30 years, and over that period we saw a nearly four-fold increase in the number of DSP recipients, from a little over 200,000 to the current approximate 800,000 people on the payment. Much of that growth has occurred over the full 30 years, although the strongest growth was between 1991 and 2002.
A fourfold increase over that 30-year period, but surely as Australia's population gets older, Australia is an ageing population, surely that plays an important factor in the increase of recipients.
Yes, so we looked at the factors that could account for that growth, and obviously population growth is an important contributor to that growth. Between 1982 and 2012, the population aged 16 to 64 increased by about 50%, from 10 million to 15 million. So population growth on its own accounts for about 20% of the 600,000 increase in number of recipients. It's about 120,000 people. Other factors are that the Australian population has been ageing. That effect really only comes into play from about 1991. So then as we got the baby boomer cohort moving into ages where DSP receipt is more likely, that population ageing has acted to increase DSP receipt by about 17%. And the other big factor that may be a little bit more surprising to people is that increases in the female retirement age also contribute about 17% to the increase in number of people on DSP. So since 1995, the female retirement age has been increasing by half a year every 2 years, up towards the male age of 65. It won't reach 65 until January of 2014, so there's still a little bit more projected growth in the DSP due to that source. The essential idea is that women who were previously on the age pension are now moving on to the DSP when in that 60 to 64 years age range, when they otherwise would have been on the age pension.
So you have these changes in, you know, in the female labour force participation, the population, and the ageing Australian population. These are some of the factors, but these are not the only factors you have found in relation to what has increased recipients of the DSP.
No, that's right. So that still leaves about half the growth in the number of recipients, or about 300,000 people, that are not explained by those factors. And there we really find that there's a mixture of potential factors, which we're not actually able to quantify the relative contributions, but we're able to provide some indicative information on the likely factors that have impacted. So among those factors are certainly indications that increases in unemployment lead to an increase in flows onto the DSP. As people lose jobs, particularly low-skilled workers, we see more people flowing onto the benefit. And you get something of a ratcheting effect there. So when the unemployment rate goes up, the number of people flowing into the payment rises, but then when the unemployment rate comes down, we don't get a corresponding increase in outflows. So they tend to stay on the benefit long-term, essentially until typically until they retire. So each time the unemployment benefit goes up, you get this so-called ratcheting up of the number of people on the benefit. There's also some evidence that structural changes to the Australian economy have contributed. So there, over the last 20 years, we've seen a decline in low-skilled, particularly manufacturing jobs. A lot of older, low-skilled men with disabilities who lost their jobs as a result of that structural change ended up moving onto the DSP and not coming back and staying on that benefit long term. There are also some effects of policy reforms to the payment itself that have occurred over time, both positive and negative. So in 1987, there was a tightening of eligibility criteria, which resulted in a reduction in inflows into the benefit. But then in 1991, there was another change to eligibility criteria, which, while not intended, actually had the effect of substantially loosening the eligibility criteria. And previous researchers, in particular by Bob Gregory and Lee Shin Kai, they provide quite strong, compelling evidence that that 1991 disability reform package substantially increased inflows onto the benefit. Something else that we looked at, though, is more generally at welfare receipt by people with disability. And we were only able to look at the last 20 years for that. But what we found was that the level of welfare dependence of people with disability has actually steadily declined over the last 20 years. And the employment rates of people with disability have also correspondingly increased. How do we reconcile that with the growth in disability support pension receipt? Well, it's essentially that there's been what we might call benefit shift, that increasingly disabled individuals are more likely to be on the DSP than another benefit than previously. And this reflects a few factors. One is that some payment types have been closed or discontinued, things like mature age allowance, wife pension, widow's pension, and so forth, have been closed off. So previously, people with disability may have received those benefits are now being they're now being found on the DSP. There's also been a more stringent criteria applied to recipients of, in particular, unemployment benefits or the New Start allowance, increased from about 1996 onwards. We've seen a ramping up of activity, so-called activity test requirements, things like requirements to search for work, to participate in work for the dole or other mutual obligation requirements. And we think that has also helped push people with disability from unemployment benefits to the DSP. Some similar sorts of changes to the parenting payments in more recent years have also been associated with that pushing of people with disability from those benefit types to DSP. Also important over the last 15 years is that, compared particularly with the unemployment benefit, the DSP benefit level has become considerably more attractive. The benefit level is considerably higher now than it was 15 years ago compared to the unemployment benefit. And so that in itself has encouraged a shift from other benefit types to the DSP. The relative generosity, and I stress that this is a relative concept here. I'm not by any means suggesting that the benefit itself is generous. I'm talking here in a relative sense, relative to other payments, but also relative to wages of low-skilled workers. The DSP has tended to rise over the last 15 to 20 years. We know that most, or at least the majority of DSP recipients are relatively low-skilled, certainly at least measured by the types of jobs they were working in prior to moving on to the DSP, or their levels of educational attainment, that on those measures they tend to be relatively low-skilled. And we also know that low-skill wages have not risen at the same rate as the DSP, particularly in recent years.
We have seen basically a change from, say, recipients on New Start, for example, moving to the DSP. what you're saying, there's been a relative increase in generosity in the last 15 years for the DSP. Can you give me more details in relation to that generosity? Is it can you quantify that compared to other benefits?
Yeah, so if we were looking at, say, from the period from 1995 to 2012, then we see that the unemployment benefit has maintained it's essentially unchanged in real terms. So adjusting for inflation, the unemployment benefit has not moved for 17 years or more. The minimum wage over that period has increased in real terms by about 10%. The disability support pension, on the other hand, has increased by well over 35%. So that's particularly pronounced after some reforms in 2009-2010, which increased the disability support pension following the pension review.
If we look at the present and also the future and the pressures this will place financially on Australia, what's your opinion of the current goal to reduce the size of the DSP role? Mm-hmm. And what kind of pressures will it place on the financial system as we look at the years ahead, as we look at a more ageing population, etc.?
Australian experience, and in fact international experience, has shown that it is quite difficult to reduce DSP roles. That a common phrase used to describe disability related receipt is that it's an absorbing state. That once you go onto the benefit, you never leave it, except to die or to go onto the age pension. And it's proved notoriously difficult, not just in Australia but internationally, to reduce DSP or disability-related welfare roles by moving people off the benefit. That most policy success historically has been on preventing people moving onto the benefit in the first place. And Australia has had some limited success at affecting inflows in the past. But what that really means, though, is that moving forward, policy interventions are likely to be quite slow in their impacts on the level of the roles. To reduce the roles is generally a long-term project, because it will primarily involve reducing inflows. And what this also suggests is that early intervention programs are the most successful strategies that internationally have been adopted. So programs that focus most attention on getting disabled workers back to work as quickly as possible have been the most successful programs at reducing DSP receipt. Given what's on the table in Australia, there have been some moves to increase the focus on moving DSP recipients off the benefit, but given the scale of the interventions proposed, we don't see this having much impact on outflows over coming years. And also, given the moderate nature of proposals that would impact on DSP inflows over coming years, we also think they are likely to have fairly moderate, even long-term impacts on DSP roles. So given population projections, population ageing, and as well our projected effects of further increases in the retirement age for both men and women, which start from 2017 when the age of eligibility for the age pension progressively increases to 67. With those effects combined, even if favourable economic conditions persist, we'd still forecast that the DSP role will exceed 1 million within 10 years. Absent some major new policy initiative that has certainly not been flagged by any of the political parties, we would expect to see the DSP role exceeding 1 million within 10 years. And that is in the relatively benign scenario where we don't have a recession. And I think that when we were looking at the last 20 years, I did say that we have noticed that welfare receipt of people with disability has declined and employment rates of people with disability have declined. But that has been in a context of quite benign economic conditions for Australia. Mm. We haven't had a recession in that 20-year period, although we have had some relatively small increases in unemployment. And the longer-term historical evidence is that recessions do precipitate large increases in inflows. So it would be wrong to be complacent about future prospects for DSP growth based on the last 20 years alone, because, as I said, we haven't had a severe economic downturn in that 20-year period. Richard Birkhauser, Mary Daly and Brian Lucking, they show in their article that that recessions have a very important impact on large impact on DSP or disability-related welfare receipt in the US and indeed in other OECD countries. And Australian experience has similarly shown that, in particular, the 1991 recession was associated with a large inflow into DSP. So they make the very good point that Australia may well be vulnerable to a recession. Australia may indeed be one recession away from another DSP blowout, if you like, that the number of recipients could increase very dramatically if we were in the next few years to have a recession, which I guess increasingly is looking uncomfortably likely. It would certainly be wrong to be too complacent about the size of the DSP role in Australia.
Yeah. Well, just looking at that article, which is also the article by Professor Birkhauser and others that is also in the Australian Economic Review, which focuses very much on that, as you said, which is Australia one recession away from a disability blowout? Richard looks at other countries as well, such as the United States, Netherlands and Sweden, who've experienced this huge growth in their disability programs. And he looks at what Australia could learn from that. What can Australia learn from these countries in that respect?
So I think the key overriding message of their paper is this notion that prevention is easier than cure, that it's much harder to get DSP recipients back into work than to keep disabled workers in work. Early intervention is key. They also draw particular lessons from the Dutch experience, where recent reforms in the Netherlands have had substantial effects on reducing disability-related welfare receipt. And they identify the main factor in delivering that reduction being a change in the incentives faced by employers in particular. So under their reforms, employers are required to fund the first 2 years of the disability benefit for workers who move on to the benefit. They also pay a disability tax that's experience rated. So the more of their workers they have ending up on the disability rolls, the higher this tax. And they argue that this has had a substantial effect on reducing inflows onto the disability benefits. There's much stronger incentives now for employers to keep their disabled workers or to take actions to get their disabled workers back into work, because they're facing the costs, much a higher proportion of the costs of disability related benefit receipt. What's important about this reform is that it produces responses from employers early on in the process. So when the disability first arises, when they would first be moving on to benefits, that's when it creates these sharp incentives to prevent that move onto the benefit. In a similar way, but somewhat differently, Sweden has also had some success in reducing disability-related benefit receipt. Again, the focus was on early intervention, but here it was more based on putting resources into early rehabilitation of disabled workers. So there was just a new and strong focus on rehabilitating newly disabled workers.
Yeah, as you say, the key point within their paper is prevention is better than cure, basically, because once people go on to that disability programs, it's kind of very difficult to move them off to something else.
That's right. There's a lot of evidence that dependence on disability-related welfare receipt becomes long-term. It becomes very entrenched and then very hard to change.
Well, Roger, it's fascinating in this edition of the Australian Economic Review, this policy forum that looks at disability support programs. Both your and Richard's paper is included in this edition, as we said. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.